Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
With me now, New York State Attorney General and Democratic gubernatorial hopeful, Elliot Spitzer. Mr. Spitzer, welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here. Good morning.
We were just talking about the Stuytown sale. You heard Councilman Gorodnik. In your opinion, what's the significance of this sale for affordable housing in New York?
I don't think we know yet. I know that the Tishman Speyer Company is a great tenant and participant in the New York real estate community, that they are very well respected. These are serious long-term investors who do not invest to turn something around, sell it overnight, make a quick buck in a way that sometimes is looked down upon. They are very interested in the long-term economic success of New York City, which means they have a long-term interest in keeping the middle class here. They are very sensitive to the issues and concerns that the councilman was just articulating. And so I am confident that they will handle the situation with great sensitivity.
Why think that that would be the case? Why wouldn't they seek, like most companies would, to make as much profit as they can, to raise the rents as high as they can?
Well, they may have an interest in maximizing revenue, but their interest in this piece of property, I think, reflects their understanding that New York City is, we believe, still the preeminent city in the world, the best place to live, the best place to do business. People want to be here. They understand Stuytown and Peter Cooper are middle-class enclaves, and that is their great characteristic. They also understand there will be some apartments there, and this was in the prospectus for sale, and so I think this is what Dan, the councilman, is worried about. There will be some apartments that are released from the stabilization mandates, and certainly they are counting on that. But I don't think they will do anything untoward or try to force people out. That is simply not the nature of Jerry Speyer, who is a very fine, upstanding individual.
Well, I think the question that the councilman was asking me to ask you is essentially that this wouldn't even be happening if the state legislature hadn't weakened the rent laws in 1997 to allow decontrol of many vacant apartments. Was that law wrong in your opinion, and would you seek to change it as governor?
Well, what I've said is that law was extended recently until 2011, I believe, is the terminus. The element of that law that needs to be examined, and I've said this before, is the $2,000 threshold. And the reason for that is that the $2,000 threshold, when it was put in place, was deemed to be luxury decontrol. $2,000 a month at that point was considered to be a luxury rent. Now, of course, if you speak to folks, $2,000 no longer is a fair demarcation point between luxury and non-luxury. It is all too frequently the case that for a reasonably modest apartment, you're paying $2,000. So what I've said is that there should be thought given to a COLA, cost of living indexing concept. I guess COLA stands for cost of living adjustment, technically, that is applied to so many other facets of our economic structure. Interestingly, I saw one of the very conservative voices the other day, I think it may have been Steve Forbes, was saying, let's put a COLA on capital gains indexing.
Huh.
So the argument would be, all right, you want to do it on capital gains. Perhaps we should do the same thing for the 2000 so that threshold reflects what the concept really was, which is a luxury decontrol notion.
What would be the right number for today?
I'm not going to throw out a number. The concept is what we should begin to discuss. And again, this is not an issue that is technically on the table right now because the statute as it now exists is in place until 2011.
Elliot Spitzer, my guest on WNYC. On development in general, Mr. Spitzer, when you remember I introduced you at the Harlem Week luncheon in August, and you said Governor Pataki's Empire State Development Corporation has spent too much money on the wrong things and not enough on the right things. What are some of those wrong and right things?
Well, the good news is that the New York City real estate market is booming. And as a consequence, we are seeing projects being offered, discussed, whether it is the redevelopment of Madison Square Garden and the Moynihan Station, conceptually a wonderful project, the West Side Yards, where there's an enormous piece of property that can be developed. The market itself will move those projects, and should. And we should move them as quickly as we can to continue bringing into the marketplace thousands and thousands of units of additional housing that we desperately need. Where they have not been active and where there has been a void has been in the area of affordable housing. And I've spoken about that throughout this campaign. Mike Bloomberg has done more in that area than any other anybody else, quite frankly, in recent memory. Ed Koch was quite good in this regard as well. But you have to go back much farther to find a mayor dedicated to the issue of housing. The state has not done what it could be doing. We have large pieces of property. We have capital at our disposal. We have zoning opportunities in terms of state-owned properties, carrot and sticks that we can use with localities. Those are the policy tools we have. If we want to relieve the affordable housing crisis, long-term, the only way to do it is to add units, hundreds of thousands of units. This is a major policy area that we have to think about.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, I understand, is holding up the Moynihan Station project. Is he doing the right thing?
I don't know enough about who's doing what to whom in that one. I know that it is cycled before the PACB, the Public Authority Control Board, over the past number of months. The problem, I think, is that right now they're trying to rush through things that may not be fully baked. The concept of the development is great. It moves the garden from where it is now, a block and a half west or so. You develop the space above the garden. You rebuild Penn Station. You let the Moynihan, what we will be calling the Moynihan Station, be developed in a way that will be a much more vibrant part of Manhattan. All of that is great. The financing of it is still unclear. We're talking about a major infrastructure investment in Penn Station. Who pays for it? Where does the money come from? So it's a bit unclear as of yet how those pieces get filled in. It should happen. It should happen quickly. I don't know whether the specific proposal before the PACB is right, wrong, or indifferent. I've not been part of that discussion.
And what about the Atlantic Yards project in Brooklyn? Are you for it as it is? And do you think the Pataki administration should delay approval until after the election?
I'm for it. And I know this riles a fair number of people. And again, I was not involved in the process. And I don't say that to hedge. I know there are people who feel very fervently that it was too big. It was just scaled back by 8%, I believe. And without having been involved in the process, that seems to me to be an appropriate compromise. It is a major development in downtown Brooklyn that will help. First, I think getting the Nets there and a stadium is good for Brooklyn. We will get many units of affordable housing. That is great. We will get commercial space. All of it suggests that this is a very good project with some exciting architecture. I'm not the aesthete. I'm not going to pass judgment on good or bad architecture, but I see the pictures and I say, hey, wow, that's pretty cool looking. It's different. It seems like a good project.
You don't think it's out of scale for the neighborhood?
You know, certainly those who are living adjacent to it have been saying that, and they've been saying it with great energy, and I respect that view. What happened recently with the 8% reduction seemed like a reasonable compromise, and so that's why I think let's move forward.
Democratic gubernatorial candidate Elliot Spitzer, my guest on WNYC this morning. I want to ask you about poverty. Mayor Bloomberg recently received his Poverty Task Force report, as I'm sure you know, and he says job creation is not enough to get people out of poverty in New York. Would you change anything about the role of the state in fighting poverty?
Oh, sure. It is at a very deep level, of course, one of the major crises we are confronting, an increasingly stratified city and nation. Let's focus here on New York State at first and the city as well, where we are generating enormous wealth, but the distribution of that wealth, not surprisingly, is skewed towards those who have certain skill sets, lawyers, investment bankers, technical skills, all of which is very predictable given how our economy is functioning. The jobs we're creating, and it's a wonderful thing that New York City is as vibrant as it is, of course, but those jobs benefit those who have those skills. We need to bring an enormous group, a part of our population that has fallen beneath the radar screen, into that group that can compete. Now, this includes individuals who are being released from state prison, for instance, whom we are not reintegrating into our community at the rate of about 26,000 individuals a year, many of whom go into seven discrete zip codes and continue to move into those areas. They're very difficult individuals to employ. They don't have the skills. Their records are barriers often even to the sorts of jobs historically they would have gotten. So we have to think about them.
And the state could be doing more.
State could be doing more. We could be giving them the skills. The mayor I would disagree only with how you articulate it. Job creation is the essential predicate to success. It isn't sufficient because you then need to give individuals who are falling below that threshold the skills, whether it's educational skills, vocational skills, just human skills in terms of how to lead a life and live to a certain demanding schedule. We need to bring people into that society.
On educational skills, you've come out for $4 to $6 billion additional spending for the New York City public schools under the funding lawsuit, same range as the court. But skeptics say outcomes won't change without a new system of accountability. Do you agree?
I've always said money is necessary but not sufficient. I don't believe in throwing good money after bad. I don't believe in wasting the money. Nobody does. We move in tandem. We need the money to get to smaller class sizes, early literacy programs, the after-school programs that are so important, teacher training, teacher retention, all of this, building the schools, the capital piece of it is outside the 4 to 6, but all of that requires resources. So we will invest it. Do we have to impose accountability? You bet. Do we need to measure success and direct the money where it works? Of course we do. So this is one of those, I don't believe in either-or choices. Of course we put the money in, but of course we also impose accountability.
Anything specific? Any lacks of accountability that you would identify in the system right now?
Well, I think that some of the measures that we've been putting in place in terms of how we determine whether children are succeeding or failing, whether we measure how we measure teachers, how we measure principals, we can do a lot more there in terms of how we measure the actual teaching skills and how we train our teachers. This is not an area where I am an expert. I've been reading all the reports. Frank Zarb, who was asked by the governor, Governor Pataki, to issue a report, did a very good document on that a couple of years ago in the context of the litigation, trying to come up with an accountability metric that we could use. And there's some good ideas out there.
Do I recall correctly that you said something at some time about teachers needing to be evaluated more on the basis of merit, paid more on the basis of merit, or questioning tenure or something like that?
Whether I said it, I'll defer to you on that. You may have it there. I don't remember. I'm not disagreeing with the concept. Certainly, the notion of merit pay is good. The notion of bonuses for teachers who do exceptionally well, why not? These are the things that I think will help us create the teacher core that we want. We have to work and get everybody to the table and make this happen. It's been too many years right now.
A couple other issues. You've come out, let me ask you this. I'm sorry. Suffolk County has passed a crackdown on contractors who hire illegal immigrants and landlords who rent to them. Do you support the Suffolk approach?
I have to see it. I have been very skeptical of efforts to sort of sanction our immigrant community. We are an immigrant city. We are, I think, 43% of New York City itself was born overseas, a remarkable number. The vitality of the city derives from our immigrant population. And suddenly becoming the INS is not, I think, a wise approach, which is why talk about state policy, the DMV policy, which has made it increasingly difficult for individuals to get driver's licenses without certain types of ID, I think has been an unfortunate policy. The INS should enforce those laws, not states and localities. I don't know enough about what Suffolk County passed to speak specifically to it, but I'm so much skeptical of those efforts.
You've come out for legal gay marriage. Do you plan to introduce a bill as governor?
I've said it. We would draft a bill and introduce it, and that because it's in accord with what I believe in. It's just one of those matters that I respect those who disagree with me. Just to clarify, nothing I've said would mandate that religious entities recognize a marriage that might have a civil import. But if they do not recognize it because of a religious disagreement, we respect that. But I think as a matter of civil law, it should be recognized.
Do you have a comment on the charges against Assemblyman and Labor Leader Brian McLaughlin?
No. I mean, as with all cases, I let the cases proceed. It's always a shame when you see those allegations. They're only allegations, obviously. But when you see them articulated and you read the indictment, you shake your head and say, it's a shame.
We have a few more minutes with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Elliot Spitzer here on WNYC. Mr. Spitzer, the office you're leaving, Attorney General, the person who holds that office has a lot of leeway to set priorities, as I think we've seen in the difference between you and your Republican predecessor, Dennis Vacco. Do you think Andrew Cuomo and Jeanine Pirro would have different priorities in that job?
I don't know, and I certainly don't want to speak for them. I think that the priorities confronting the next attorney general are reasonably clear, and I don't mean to suggest this is an easy set of choices, but certainly we all agree that there needs to be a focus on the integrity of government itself, which is why I hope they will continue what I have done. I created a public integrity unit years ago, and we have been very successful focusing on the authorities and the agencies, government corruption, primarily outside New York City, because the U.S. Attorney's offices here and the DA's offices here have carried that those issues quite well. Out in the rest of the state, they have not.
Of course, your opponent, Mr. Faso, says that's been your biggest failing in office. Well, maybe you've done well, you know, with Wall Street, private sector, but not busting
Albany. Brian, I'll let you in on a little secret. The Wall Street cases get the big headlines because the numbers involved are huge. The most important cases we've made relate to labor protection, the environment, and government integrity. Medicaid fraud, which, of course, forget the politics. I mean, the good news is we're close to the election. That will disappear. We are up 2,000%, 2,000% in Medicaid fraud recoveries. We have completely transformed that unit. Now, it's not an argument that's going to cut through in the politics of the moment, but the reality is when it came to Medicaid fraud, focusing on authorities, agencies, government corruption, we completely changed the office. I hope they continue that. That is perhaps long-term the most important thing we've done.
Your office, I understand, has confirmed a New York Sun report this week that you have an open investigation into the Republican Attorney General candidate Jeanine Pirro based on a complaint 3 years ago by, of all people, John Spencer, then the mayor of Yonkers, who's now the Republican nominee, against Senator Clinton. What's the nature and status of that investigation?
I cannot comment about open investigations other than to say I believe what was confirmed was that there was an investigation. There was no comment about into whom or what. And so I don't want it to be overinterpreted. There was, and I have not read the Sun reporting on this, and so I do not say this in response to that. It is the case that Mr. Spencer, when he was the mayor of Yonkers, sent a letter to us alleging various improprieties in Westchester government. That letter was received and is being investigated. I don't want to suggest or have people interpret this as suggesting that there's an investigation into any individual or not.
So when they suggest that it was targeted at Pirro for trying to get favors for people, you can't confirm that?
I just don't want to confirm any aspect of that. Now, whether Mr. Spencer has released the letter, I just don't know.
All right. We're just about out of time. I know you need to go to your next appointment, but I will say that it looks like you're going to get elected governor unless you call someone a macaca, and maybe even then. Same with Senator Clinton and probably Andrew Cuomo. Why do you think this is such a lopsided year in New York politics?
Well, I think there's a pendulum that always swings in politics. We have had 12 years of Republican leadership in Albany under Governor Pataki, and there are serious problems to be confronted. The public is ready for a new approach, a new dynamism. Obviously, the backdrop of Washington, where certainly in New York, there is significant and more than justified dissatisfaction with the leadership out of the White House, reinforces the notion that we are ready for, not that I view everything through a partisan prism, but ready for a democratic approach to these issues. And there's also overlaid on top of that, I hope, an evaluation of the job that I've done as Attorney General, and perhaps there's some residue that, gee, maybe this guy Spitzer can take those skills and values into the governor's office and help us turn things around.
Well, if you are elected, good luck. We have a lot of problems in New York State. We didn't even get into some of the serious issues upstate today, so we will all do better if you do well, if you're elected. Mr. Spitzer, thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We can take your phone calls in reaction to Elliot Spitzer and the sale of Stuyvesant Town, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Call us up.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.